Welcome to the All Things Nintendo podcast. I'm Brian Shea from Game Informer, and this is a weekly podcast to discuss all the biggest news and games from the world of Nintendo. Since the day I joined Game Informer and talked about my then-favorite game of all time being Ocarina of Time, there were a couple members of the team that have given me a hard time about having not played its direct sequel, and I have teased a couple of times on past episodes that I finally dedicated myself to playing through it, and now I can officially say that I have beaten The Legend of Zelda.
Bad start.
The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask. And you heard him already. Kyle Hilliard is one of those people on the Game Informer staff who has just relentlessly teased me whenever it comes up. Oh, how do you like the sequel? Every time I brought up Ocarina of Time, it was, how do you like the sequel? Oh, when are you going to play the sequel? Oh, yeah, what are your thoughts on Majora's Mask? And Kyle, I cannot tell you them, and that's why I have you on this very show.
I know. It's like a defining feature of our relationship, is I would give you crap for not playing the follow-up to your favorite game of all time.
Now, people who are listening to the audio version of it, which is the only version that exists, they can't see that I am taking a piece of paper and casting it out into a lake and then taking a bow and arrow and firing a flaming arrow into it to symbolize the end of this era of our relationship.
Well, now I move on to Final Fantasy X, too.
Well, that's next, actually. Yeah. Like that is exactly what my plan was coming in here, right? Like, I think I talked about this part of it already on an old show, but just to give people kind of a reminder of what my plan is I have three games, my top three games of all time: Breath of the Wild, Ocarina of Time, Final Fantasy X. All of them in long-running series that barely ever get direct sequels, but all three of these have gotten direct sequels, and the common thread with all of them is I've never played any of the direct sequels. Obviously, I haven't played Tears of the Kingdom because it's not out yet.
But you're not going to, right, is your plan?
Yeah, exactly. This is me in protest playing the other ones and ignoring the new one. But no, so I'm playing Majora's Mask. I just finished it a couple weeks ago. I am moving on to Final Fantasy X-2. We probably won't do a dedicated segment on that because, you know, it's on Switch now, but it was originally just a PS2 game.
You have a platform, man. If you're, you know, you should.
Well, as I told Ben Hansen on a previous episode, sometimes there are weeks that there's not a lot to talk about. So who knows what Final Fantasy X-2 chatter might break out on a future episode of All Things Nintendo. But so yeah, Majora's Mask was first, then Final Fantasy X-2, and then finally I'm going to conclude this odyssey by playing The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
Beautiful.
So that was kind of the method to my madness here. And, you know, I'm officially a third of the way through it. I don't know, like, how the actual play times go out. I'm sure Tears of the Kingdom is probably going to be the longest one of them, right? Like, I know that Final Fantasy X-2 is, like, a full-on JRPG, but, like, I feel like I'm probably going to put the most amount of time in Tears of the Kingdom, right?
Maybe. I don't know. I wonder. Like, that's an interesting question. Like, I wonder if it'll be a little more condensed than Breath of the Wild, kind of like Majora's Mask.
Okay, so Tears of the Kingdom. Final Fantasy X-2 says 30 hours is the main story, which is around the time that Majora's Mask is. Like, I think I put about 35 hours into Majora's Mask. And so people know, like, what I did was I actually use the Nintendo Switch Online expansion pack. I didn't play the 3DS version, which I wish I could have, but like, it just feels so hard for me to go back to the 3DS after playing the Switch at this point for so long. So I played that, which also enabled me to use save states, which I know some people be like, oh my God, pearl clutching. But it's definitely an older game. And I'm glad I had those save states because it's such a game of, like, especially the N64 version, where you just have to wait for something to happen. And, like, there were times where I would, like, be like, all right, well, I have to wait for this very particular thing to happen at this exact moment on the third day. It's the first day now. So I would just leave the Switch on with Majora's Mask on the screen.
Yeah.
And I would, like, go do the dishes, or I'd, like, go get my laundry and put it in the thing while the clock was moving. But I would enter a save state right then and there, or whenever I came back and it still wasn't there. So that way, if I accidentally let it go by too fast or too far, I would reload that save state. So it was stuff like that. It wasn't like,
Memory serves, the 3DS version actually helps with that and lets you, like, fast forward and stuff, which is,
well, there
nice.
Is a song of double time that you can play in Majora's Mask on N64 that fast forwards by half a day, but you still have to wait around. Like, if it's like, all right, you want to get to, like, the end of, like, the second night,
right,
you still have to wait for those, like, 12 hours or whatever to come around. So there was ways to like fast forward through that.
But dude, like it's fine. Like play it the best way you're going to play it. Right. Cause it's like, don't make it more difficult for yourself to try to have this purest version of the game. It's like, you're just not going to play the game that way. You know, like, so like I'm a big proponent of like, yeah, like play it on the Switch, use save states, because like the other option is just getting annoyed with it and not playing it, which is no good, you know?
Yeah. And speaking of getting annoyed with it, like I mentioned when I first told you I was doing this, like probably like what, a month ago now at this point, maybe even longer, that Jeff Akrovic was always telling me, former Game Informer creative director, that I should use a guide. So that way I can make sure I'm getting everything that I need to get out of the, like all the side stuff, getting all the optional masks. So that way, when I get to the end of the game, I can get the Fierce Deity Link mask.
And it is a game that is like worth being doing a completionist run, right? It's not just like, oh, you got all the heart pieces. Isn't that great? It's like every mask kind of has its own little story. It's like one of the best, like, you know, people always talk about Witcher 3. Right, as like, oh, best side quest. It's like, man, Majora's Mask, though.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I didn't get all the heart pieces. I got a lot of them. I think I was like 1.5 full rows of hearts. So I did it. I got all the bottles, and I got all of the masks. And then, God, what was the other thing that I got all the stray fairies as well, which was a massive pain in some ways. I definitely used the guide for how to get those fairies because some of those were. I would have never found those in a million years. And same thing for some of the masks, right? Where it's like, there's so many side quests where it's like, oh my God, like how would I have ever figured this out? Like, this feels like a game that was designed with the intent of getting people to buy an official guide.
I guess I did not use a guide when I was young, but maybe I'm just a super genius. I'm trying to remember.
I mean, I've always said that about you, right?
I certainly beat it without a guide, but maybe it was like there were a handful of masks that my brother and I went online to figure out, I think. So I'm not like a super genius or anything, but yeah, I think the core game, I think you could probably get through like any other Zelda game, but yeah, it's the side stuff where it gets tricky.
Especially when it comes down to like, it's not just Ocarina of Time where it's like, all right, we have to just go to this place and talk to this person or like do these things in order. It's no, you have to go here at this time, here at this time, here at this time. And if you miss any of them, good luck. You're going to have to start the cycle all over again.
Yeah.
Which that was the thing that kind of like grinded on me a lot where it's like, ah, crap, I messed the sequence up. I'm going to have to basically start this day over because I didn't have like a save state or whatever.
Well, which by the way, we're burying the lead a little bit here. We're kind of like getting into it, but like, what did you like it? Like what was your, give the big overview. What's the review, you know?
Overall, I liked it. There's a lot of stuff that I really didn't like. I think some of the stuff was not breadcrumbed in an effective enough way where it's like I could figure it out in like I said, there were so many times where I was like, I would have never figured this out if I didn't have a guide telling me that like, oh, yeah, you got to go talk to this person at this time of the day. Like one of my favorite side quests was actually that way. That was the one with what's his name? Coffee?
Oh, like the wedding?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so like
that one's good. Yeah.
I mean, we're going to get into some spoilers here for people who have not played Majora's Mask and want to preserve the feeling. But Coffee's mask, where basically it's like a guy who was turned into a child by Skull Kid, I guess. And he was about to get married and he went and like hid and like was kind of like trying to, I guess, exact his revenge or something. On the thief guy, right? God, what was the thief's name? But anyway, he was trying to, I guess, hide away and then exact his revenge and then find some way to be back with his wife or his soon-to-be wife. And I think that the conclusion of that perfectly shows like what I do like so much about Majora's Mask. And that's like, seeing how people deal, it was almost like Don't Look Up, if you've ever seen that movie, before Don't Look Up existed. Because there's some people who are like, oh, it's weird. Like it looks a little different. Other people like feel like they're in complete denial.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And then other people, and then like it comes down to it where it's like, all right, this moon is like 5 minutes away from hitting Termina.
And that was like, apparently the sort of genesis of the sort of core idea of like, apparently Onuma and friends were at like a wedding where bombs were going off nearby.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, I don't know how true that is, honestly. I've heard different versions of it, but like just the idea of like trying to maintain a sense of celebration and like happiness in the face of disaster. It's a relatable, it's a currently relatable feeling.
Yeah, so you know? the story that I heard was that Aonuma, I guess North Korea was doing some sort of like missile tests back in the late 90s. And around that time, he was invited to a wedding and he had to go to a wedding. And he was like, it's going to be so weird to like be like trying to have like this celebratory tone when, you know, bombs could be dropping on us at any moment.
Right. Yeah.
So that's the version of it I heard, but that was very interesting. And I love that, like, you know, when you go around Clock Town and talk to all the people, like they react to what's happening at that particular part of the day. Like early on, they're like, yeah, the moon does look pretty big right now, doesn't it? And then by the end, like, you know, you see how they're all like reacting to it. Like some of them are just like going to the milk bar, the quote unquote milk bar, and right, just being like, all right, yeah, let's just drink a lot of milk because it's the end of the world, whatever. And then other, like the postman being like, basically like, oh no, I should flee, but like I feel like I have a purpose of like delivering mail. And you give him the priority letter and he runs down and he's like, all right, now I can flee because I feel like I've completed my purpose. And like then of course like Coffee and his soon to be wife or her fiance just kind of like being like, we want to be together for the end. And I don't know, there's just a lot of really great character moments, especially when like it gets down to the wire with the moon crashing into Termina.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing that I have. It's funny, the thing about Majora's Mask is I played it when it came out and I enjoyed it, right? I was like, oh yeah, great Zelda follow-up, Ocarina of Time, wonderful. But I was like, I don't really want to play it again though, because the game was so much about repeating the same 3 days over and over. Mm-hmm. That I was like, I already feel like I replayed it a number of times, so it was always kind of like this thing where I was like, yeah, good game, I you know, I don't know if I'll ever revisit it. And then the 3DS version came out and I played that and it really skyrocketed Majora's Mask in my favorites, like my favorite Zelda games list. Like it revisiting it again, I was just like, oh, actually, you know what, this is really fun to play again. And it like lets you focus so much on the tone of the game, which is still like, you know, all Zeldas are pretty dark, ultimately. Jacob Geller has a great YouTube video, a former intern and wonderful YouTube essayist these days, about like how every Zelda game is kind of the darkest Zelda game.
Mm-hmm. I do love that video.
Yeah, but Majora's Mask, I think, for me at least, is the one that like just maintains that like sort of dark, sort of dour tone about, like I said, like it's very relatable to our generation now in the face of like climate change and stuff like that, of being like, there's disaster happening, but you still have to kind of live your life. And I don't know, it just really hit me hard when I replayed the 3DS version. And now it's just kind of become like, if I were to rank my Zelda games, it would be up there. It'd probably be top five for me at this point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I liked it that much. And I think that maybe it's because I played it where I was following the guide so step by step almost that like
you couldn't focus as much on the tone. It was more about like the mechanics and stuff, which is how I played it the first time too. I totally
was like, I just wanted to ensure that I was getting everything I could out of the experience, right? I wanted to get all the masks. I didn't want to waste, like, if I saw in the guide like, oh, you have to like wait around for this, but while you're waiting for this to happen, you can go, you have enough time to run and get this, and that'll enable you to do this later, like in a more efficient manner. And I would do that typically.
Yeah.
What was your favorite mask to use?
Oh man, I gotta pull up. Let me see. I mean, there's some that are like fun, like the dancing one. It's so weird.
It is very weird, especially since it's not even like, it's not even like a mask. It's just like you put like a statue of that guy on your forehead.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just like the animation is so strange, and you can kind of like, I think if I remember correctly, right, you can put it on, you can just kind of do it anywhere, yep, right? Which is super weird and fun. I like the bomb mask just because of its how like useful it is, if that makes sense.
Extremely useful.
Yeah, and there's the mask that turns you into a giant for that one boss fight, which is cool. Mm-hmm. The Fierce Deity mask is very cool. I like swimming as Azora. I was like if I was sort of just exploring sometimes, I think I would often just turn into the Zora just because I thought it was like a cool design.
Yeah, it's kind of like
And the fox mask, the Keaton mask, right? The bunny mask lets you run faster.
Oh yeah,
right?
That was mine because that's useful.
Yeah, I would wear that a lot. Yeah, that's the thing about him. Like, even the ones that are just like single use, like they're all like weird and interesting, which is I like, you know.
Yeah, there were some that I was like, this really served no purpose whatsoever.
Right. Yeah. Like the dancing one.
The Great Fairies mask was actually very useful when I was tracking down those stray fairies. It just makes it, if there's a fairy in the room, they fly to you if they can.
Oh, right. Doesn't the hair like point in the direction too or something?
Oh, does it? I didn't even realize that.
I could be wrong about that. Don't quote me on that. It's been a while.
What was your favorite dungeon in Majora's Mask?
Ooh, okay. So we got the opening one. Woodfall
Temple, which is in the swamp. Snowhead Temple, which, you know, in the snowy area. Great Bay, which is the ocean one. And Stone Tower Temple.
I like Stone Tower just because it's like weird, right? You're like up on the ceilings and like moving around, right? Mm-hmm. And like rotating rooms and stuff like that.
Yeah, you had to like flip the castle or the temple halfway through, basically.
Right. I liked that one. But I have a very specific memory of the first dungeon. What did you call it again? You knew the name.
Woodfall
Temple. I think it was when I replayed it, maybe, and I kind of knew what I was doing. And I made it to the boss on the third day, like on my first run, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was fighting the boss like while the timer was counting down on the third day. So like there was like an earthquake happening outside, right? The world is shaking. It's really intense. And I was fighting the boss and I beat the boss like right under the wire. And it was just such a cool way to experience because like I had worked so hard and sprinted so fast to try to get to this boss.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, it was so intense because like the world was just like going to hell outside of the dungeon while I was like fighting this giant creature. So like that's always going to be just a fond memory. But as far as like the design, I think, yeah, that fourth dungeon is probably the coolest. What about you?
I think that was probably my favorite just overall dungeon. What I didn't like about that or that temple was getting to it because you had to like rearrange the blocks and you had to climb up and I fell a couple of times and that sucked having to climb back up to like the top of the tower to get in. But yeah, the dungeon itself was very coolly designed. I don't typically like water temples, especially in this era of Zelda.
Yeah.
But I didn't think the Great Bay Temple was terrible. I do have good memories of the Woodfall Temple, but like I think the Snowhead Temple was really good. And I think mostly I liked it because I liked the boss battle of that. Goat, is that his name?
Oh, right, where you're like racing around in a circle. That is really cool.
G-O-H-T, yeah. Goat, where, yeah, he's running in a circle and you roll up as the Goron and have to like basically launch yourself off ramps. That was super fun.
Yeah, it's fun to go full speed as the Goron for sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Anytime there was like, all right, you have this like intricate set of jumps that you have to do was so much fun. Same way with the Zora mask, where it was like, all right, here's a swimming challenge for you. Like, I don't know if you did like the thing where you had to like race the beavers or like follow the beavers around.
Oh, I'm sure I did. I mean, I 100% of that game on, you know, N64 and 3DS. So. Okay.
But yeah, like over in Great Bay, there's a pair of brothers of beavers and they...
Beaver Brothers?
Beaver Brothers, yeah. They are like, hey, we have an empty bottle that we'll give you if you follow along like these rings. So I did that and they, I think it was an empty bottle. It was either that or a heart piece. I don't know. I wasn't as strict on the heart pieces as I was the empty bottles. Like, I have to get all the empty bottles.
Those are like the most valuable thing in Zelda.
And you've asked Aonuma about that, right?
Probably. I think so.
Like burning questions back before we did the rapid fires.
Yeah. I think so. That sounds right.
About like, why are bottles so valuable? Like, why aren't there very many bottles in Hyrule? And he's just like, I don't know. We wanted it to be cool.
Why are you asking me? I think is what he said. No, I'm just kidding.
He did tell me that. He did say, why are you asking me these questions when I interviewed him at E3 2019? Because it was an interview about Link's Awakening, the remake. And I sat down with him, and it was right around the time that like we were planning on maybe doing something for like an anniversary of A Link to the Past, which was coming up in the next couple of years. And I wanted to get a couple quotes from him about like the impact of A Link to the Past. So like I asked him, like, hey, like, you know, when you started work on Ocarina of Time, was like A Link to the Past like a big influence to you? Because, you know, there's some structural similarities there.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, it was mostly Link's Awakening that inspired me. And then I asked him again about like another thing about A Link to the Past, and like his answer was like, why are you asking me these questions? I didn't work on A Link to the Past. I was like, no,
but
no,
you played it, dude.
Here is why I'm asking you those questions. I wanted to like see like the impact that had on you. And he just kept saying like, oh no, A Link to the Past wasn't as big of an influence as Link's Awakening was for me.
Right. It's funny. I did find that interview. I asked him, why are bottles so hard to find in the Zelda universe? Is there a shortage of glass? And but his answer was very like, no, mechanically they're very valuable. I suppose it's true since they can hold so many different things, it makes it possible for you to do more in the game. They do have a very precious existence from that perspective. As to why there are so few, I would simply say it has to be that way based on how powerful they are in the game. So he just took it at total face value as like, oh, you really want to know, okay, mechanically.
Well, one of my favorites I ever did with that was with the creator of Splatoon. Mm. And I asked him like, all right, well, you know, when you spray the ink on the ground and then the inklings can submerge themselves underneath it, are they actually sinking beneath the sidewalk, or are they like becoming one with the ink and kind of like stretching to become flat? Because like, you know, the ink doesn't like sink below the actual surface. So like what's going on there?
It's a good question.
And he like tried to explain it, and he's like, oh man, you're really putting it on me today. Like, I think I stumped him a couple of times, but he was a very good sport about it.
That's funny.
But yeah, so I think Goat was my overall favorite boss.
Yeah, that one's good.
Twin Mold was surprisingly easy. That was the one for the Stone Tower Temple, where it was like the two worms that kind of come out when you become a giant. Like, I feel like they just kind of flew around, and I'm like, fair game, slash me. Like, that's what it
felt
like.
It's just like, you're a giant. It's like, that's the sort of cool part of that fight, I guess, right?
Yeah. Majora's Wrath, I feel like, would have been extremely difficult, the final boss, had I not had Fierce Deity Link.
Yeah, which... no, that makes it so breezy. I actually don't even remember the strategy if you're not Fierce Deity Link. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't even remember how you do it without Fierce Deity at this point, because I've only done it with Fierce Deity the last couple times I've fought him.
Yeah, I mean, I told one of my best friends, who's a big Majora's Mask fan as well, that here's how I did it, and he was like, oh, you've got to, like, you know, it saves right before you go into that fight, so you should go in and try it without the mask. Mm. And I was like, I thought about that, but then on the other hand, I worked my ass off to get all of those masks. I earned a walk in the park when it comes to that final boss battle.
Right, yeah.
Like, that's why I did all the other work. Like, I could have beaten this game in, what, like 20 hours instead of the 35 that I put in if I just wanted to, like, mainline it and not get the other masks. But no, I went around and did all the side stuff for the express purpose of making Majora just a breeze. So I was like, I've earned it. It's not like I entered a cheat code. It's like, no, I went around and did all this stuff. As far as mini bosses are concerned, Wizrobes are extremely annoying in this fight, or this game. Like, you fight them like, what, like seven times over the course of this game or something like that, where that's the one where they're like, they teleport around the room and like the different like pads.
Okay, I remember these guys. Yeah. I'm like Googling stuff as you're bringing it up.
And then the king of Ikana Castle, he was a surprisingly difficult fight. He was one of the few times that I actually like died in a fight. He's the one that like he's like the skeleton king that's sitting on the throne. He has the two like kind of lackeys that he sends out that you fight. And they close the blinds. But if you open up the curtains, the lights will shine through, and you have like the reflective shield, and you can like, if you incapacitate them, you have to shoot you have to reflect the light onto like their bodies. And then that makes them evaporate. Okay.
I'm pulling this guy up now.
The king of Ikana Castle, where he like would decapitate his head, and then like basically it would just fly at you, and there was almost no way to avoid it. Like, I tried the bunny mask, and that worked sometimes. It gave me a little bit extra speed to like avoid it, but like that was a real problem for me for a while.
Gotcha. And he was just a mini boss.
Yeah, he was like the, well, I guess he was technically like the boss of the mini dungeon of Ikana Castle.
Okay. Yeah, I vaguely remember this guy.
But yeah, like, I don't know. I really liked the characters in this game. I think that the Happy Mask Salesman is a complete psychopath.
I hope he like shows up in Tears of the Kingdom, right? As like, you know what I mean? Like sometimes like the way a Beetle showed up in Breath of the Wild and stuff. Yeah. Like, let's bring a version of the Happy Mask Salesman back.
That would be cool. As long as like, I mean, and like, it'd be cool if you could actually buy masks from him and like do stuff. I don't want like a full on like mask mechanic. Like, it seems like this game is already packing so much into it.
Yeah.
With like the potential for like vehicle customization and all this other stuff. So I don't know if I'd want like full like transformation masks, but if there was some sort of like mask sales you can get, I mean, you could already buy like everything else, right? Like you could get like different hats and
I mean, there were masks in Breath of the Wild, you know.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know, like, but like having the Happy Mask Salesman be the guy who gives them to you in some way would be cool.
Yeah.
I've been watching a lot of like Zelda theories lately on YouTube. There's a few channels that like do a really good job of like just like being like, what's the deal with this one statue in Breath of the Wild? And then they're like, oh, well, maybe it's a reference to this obscure character in this Twilight Princess or Skyward Sword. And it's like, if it is true, like the Zelda team does not get enough credit for like the ways that they like, they sow these seeds that like they just expect players to uncover, or like maybe it'll pay off in Tears of the Kingdom or something. But like, there's a lot of stuff that like they just plant seeds and then either never pay it off or like allow the community to discover it on their own. Like, it's wild if like half of the theories that I'm watching on YouTube are correct.
Yeah, no, I love that. So I've actually been kind of avoiding it for Tears of the Kingdom ahead of release. But like, once I've played the game, I'm going to dig into a lot of that stuff for sure. Mm.
So what was your favorite transformation mask? So like Deku, Zora, or Goron?
I mean, probably, like I said earlier, I like Zora, just because I like the design of the Zora. Mm-hmm. But I, as a person who plays drums, I would always, I liked being the Goron as well. And I would even like do that thing, you know, where you kind of like try to play music, you know, using the tools within that are there, you just know.
Trying to like play like actual songs,
yeah, like drum beats and guitars and stuff, which you could totally do. Like, it's like, it's, you know, there's all kinds of ways you can bend the notes and stuff like that.
Yeah, you can control the pitch with the joystick.
Yeah, but the Zora, yeah, the Zora was probably my favorite, just looking one. I just like the way Zora Link looks,
for sure. And by the way, I was playing on the N64 controller. Speaking of the joystick, that's why I said joystick singular. I had the N64 controller for the Switch, which made it so much better to play, because just trying to play any N64 game with that pro controller is a nightmare.
yeah.
I mean, I guess, what about the inside the moon segment of this, when like, you know, you finally like, I guess, make it so Majora lets go of Skull Kid and you go up, you get kind of like alien beamed up to the moon.
Yeah.
What were you expecting the first time you went up there? Cause I was kind of expecting something complete opposite of what we got.
You know, that's tough. Like, to go back, when did this game come out? Like 2002 or 3 or something?
Came out in 2000.
2000. Okay. Man.
Think back 23 years ago. How old was Kyle at that point?
How old was I?
Yeah, how old were you in 2000?
In 2000, I would have been like 15, I guess. Something like that. But I don't remember. I don't remember what I expected, but like, now it has become sort of an iconic moment to me. Like, I can't even recollect what I expected, because the sort of tree in the distance, it just like sort of cemented in my brain as like, that's what's up there, you know, whether it's a metaphor for Skull Kid or, you know, like, I don't think it's like actually what's on the moon necessarily, but I don't know. I don't know what I expected.
I've seen the footage of Neil Armstrong
hanging out by the tree.
Yeah, he's hanging out under the tree. They all had masks on in that, you may recall, in that footage. I expected, like, you know, just chaos going up to the moon, but no. I loved that it was like super tranquil, and, you know, they're just basically like these kids that look like the Happy Mask Salesman underneath the masks of the remains of the dungeon bosses.
Right.
That was a nice touch. And do you buy into the theory that in this game, Link is dead?
No. No. I mean, I think it lines up. I think it's interesting. I think it's fun. But I also think Onuma has basically point blank said, no, that's not what's going on here.
I do like that every time a new Nintendo game comes out and it's like slightly weird, like Link's Awakening. Like, I remember Reiner had this theory that Mario Odyssey, Mario was dead. Like, you know, he got beaten by Bowser in that opening cutscene.
All right.
He gets thrown off the airship and he lands and suddenly he's surrounded by ghosts, you know, the ghosts in the Cap Kingdom. And he's like, oh, Mario's dead. Absolutely. And like Reiner was convinced on it. I think he asked like somebody about that. I think, did he have an interview with Koizumi or something?
That sounds right. Yeah.
And he, I guess he asked him straight up and he's like, Koizumi like was like, what? No. What are you talking about? Weirdo.
Why are you asking me this?
Every time I interview somebody high up at Nintendo, my goal now is to get them to be like, why are you asking me this? But yeah, is there anything else we need to talk about with Majora's Mask? I mean, do you have like a favorite quest that like I talked about how I like the coffee quest line?
I mean, I like the wedding. The wedding one is really good because that's the one that like takes the longest, if I remember correctly, to sort of
do. Because it takes place over the course of the entire 3-day stretch. And it goes all the way until the very end.
It's kind of like in, I feel like Deathloop recently, which is another game where you're sort of stuck in a loop. I feel like the big goal of that game is kind of to, like when you have a perfect day. In Deathloop, basically, is how you beat that game. You know, you go to everywhere you need to go at the right time and beat the people you need to beat at the right time. And it's like when you're seeing credits in Deathloop, you're like, all right, I nailed it. I had a perfect day. And that quest, you know, that's what the Majora's Mask quest feels like to me. It's like that wedding quest is like you have the perfect day. You just do everything you need to do and go to the right places. So I like that quest a lot. I also fondly remember the one of the grandmother who is trying to read you a story and you fall asleep.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So you have to put on the mask that makes you stay awake. Like, I thought I liked that one because I remember when I was young, I thought maybe you had to go talk to her on a different day. Like, I think I heard the story the first day and fell asleep. I was like, well, let me try the second day. Let me try the third day. Let me try at night. Let me try first thing in the morning. So I like tried all these different things that didn't work so that when I finally figured it out and got the mask and got to finally see the full story she was telling, I remember that feeling very rewarding where if you kind of just like beeline to it and know exactly what you're doing, you don't quite get the same payoff. But when I was young, I did play it that way. So that one I remember fondly as well.
Yeah, I do like that one. And it also gave you a little bit of a lore dump for the world of Termina.
Yeah, which is like you don't get that a lot in Zelda, you know, like it's all sort of sprinkled usually. So you don't often get someone just tell, you know, outside of maybe the opening prologue, you know, the sort of scrolling text at the beginning of Wind Waker and or Minish Cap or something like that, where you get a character like telling you a lot about a world. You don't get that a ton in Zelda.
What I want to know is how did Skull Kid become friends with these four like mythological giants?
I mean, I thought that was more that Majora was like, it wasn't really Skull Kid as much as it was whatever sort of spirit lives inside Majora's mask. But maybe I'm
I thought Skull Kid was like, you guys still want to be my friend, like at the end, right? Like I thought like he was friends with the giants and then he like got like he thought the giants abandoned him and that's why he wanted the mask.
Oh yeah, okay, you're closer to it than I am.
I misunderstood that, but that was my understanding, and then the mask started kind of corrupting him, and
or maybe they were all children, and then like the corruption led to them becoming these giants or something. I don't remember. You like I said, you just finished it, so you would have a better memory of it than I would.
Did you get, I mean, you said you did a completionist run, so I'm assuming you got like the gilded sword.
Yeah,
that sword makes it so much better to play this game. And it's
kind
of
early, right? It's not like a late
game
thing,
I think it's after the Snowhead Temple.
Okay. Oh yeah, I remember this thing.
So
yeah,
like after the second temple.
Can't you get like a decent sword from them, but it'll break?
Yeah, it breaks after like I think 100 swings or 100 strikes.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And then this one is the one that doesn't. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good that's a good side quest to pursue. Like, that's one of those like items that's like, oh man, absolutely, you got to get this.
Yeah, I don't know. I had a really good time with this game, and I wish that it wasn't so abstract. I'm sure the 3DS version fixes a lot of like kind of the things. I was watching a thing last night, and I guess that was one of the main reasons that Aonuma wanted to do a Majora's Mask 3D, was to improve some of the breadcrumbing and improve like the way they dole out some of the stuff. And like, all right, you get this earlier now, so that makes it so you can control the flow of time a little bit easier, or like there's a better way that you can control the flow of time that wasn't possible in the OG Majora's Mask. And I wish that they would bring that version to Switch. I mean, I've said that a billion times, but like, I would love to play that, but it's just so hard for me to go back to the 3DS form factor at this point.
Yeah. But I mean, it is the best version of Majora's Mask though. Like, without a doubt, I think the Zora doesn't swim as fast, which rubs people the wrong way, but like, if that's the one con, everything else in that game is a pro, you know?
Yeah. I mean, overall great game. I don't like it as much as Ocarina of Time. I think that I like kind of like the more straightforward nature of Ocarina of Time, and
yeah, makes sense.
It's kind of like the traditional, like, I don't know, you're fighting Ganondorf, which I always love fighting Ganondorf. I mean, it was his first appearance, but like, you know, overall, like, I think Ganondorf is one of my favorite adversaries in any video game, period. So I'm always a fan when he's in. Like, I'm super excited for Tears of the Kingdom to have Ganondorf in it, as opposed to just full on like Calamity / Beast Ganon as he was in Breath of the Wild.
I do think the game exists as a piece with Ocarina, right? Like, you have Ocarina, which is this amazing game, and then you have Majora's Mask, which is kind of like, well, let's take a look at what we did in Ocarina and sort of re-examine it and try something unique and new, and we're just gonna try different stuff. Like, I would rather have this than just something that's very similar to Majora's Mask. I'm sorry, similar to Ocarina of Time, you know, seven dungeons, yada yada. Like, I like that Majora's Mask is like funky and weird and they tried something new, but I think it kind of has to exist alongside the, like, we made the main thing, now here's the weirdo experimental thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's 100% accurate. And it's, I'm trying to think of, like, in terms of, like, the time loop games, like, because this almost has, like, roguelike elements before roguelikes were, like, the big thing to do in video games, right?
I don't know, that's such a weird thing, right? Because like, Rogue existed for a long time, and like, most games kind of had a Rogue structure, right? I mean, every time you played Contra on the Super Nintendo or the NES, you started over,
you know? Weren't like, carrying over any kind of progression, right?
Yeah, and like, I mean, roguelikes, I guess I see what you're saying. Yeah, like,
every time you start a new cycle, you know, you carry forward the masks you have, you carry forward all the essential items and weapons and everything that you got. You can transfer money over, but you lose, like, all right, all my bombs are gone, all my arrows are gone, so you kind of have to start anew there. Like, there's no like randomization really, because like, it all happens on the same loop and everything. But I think there are some elements there that are indicative of that genre.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I guess I just always thought of it more as like, it's like, Rogue and like puzzle games don't really mesh to me, right? Like, it's like a roguelike is like, how far can I get this time? Where Majora's Mask is like, what have I learned about puzzles and like, how have I expanded the world more on this loop? I don't know. It doesn't feel like a run, but I see what you're saying. Like, there's something there. There's like the Venn diagram, there's some overlap there.
Mm. Yeah, because this is more about like optimizing your time, making sure everything's happening on schedule the way you want it to, once you figure it out, right?
Yeah, as opposed to like, just, I hope the RNG really falls in 100%. My favor this time, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But like, I don't know. I had a good time with it. And you know what? I think we're going to do a definitive ranking that is related to Majora's Mask in the next segment. But anything else we need to say about Majora's Mask before we wrap up this particular segment?
No, great game. I'm glad you've finally played it. I'm proud of you.
Now, which Zelda should I play next that I've never played?
What are the choices? I've been playing Minish Cap.
I mean, that might be the one, because I didn't really have a Game Boy Advance until it was kind of later in the cycle.
God,
like,
dude,
I got an SP.
Minish
so
Cap is up there, man. Like, I, you know, Ocarina Majora, Breath of the Wild. I would put Twilight really high, and Minish Cap and Link Between Worlds are like my top Zeldas. I love Minish Cap.
Maybe it will be Minish Cap then. But
that's,
I was
great.
Thinking,
and it's not too long, man. It's breezy. It's fun.
I was thinking maybe Skyward Sword, just because I've tried that like 4 times and I've bounced off it every single time.
Oh, you never played Skyward Sword?
Well, I've played it in the sense that I have gotten to like the first dungeon and I'm just like, all right, like, you know, what is that? Like 4 or 5 hours deep, because you have to go through that lengthy intro sequence.
It is surprisingly one of the most relevant in terms of like back end lore for Breath of the Wild and presumably Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, well, Tears of the Kingdom, that's why I was thinking maybe it's Skyward Sword as my next Zelda game, because it seems like Tears of the Kingdom is leaning wholeheartedly into it.
Yeah.
Like even the, God, what's it called? The Ouroboros, where like the snake eating its own tail. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
That seems to indicate that it's like the start of the timeline and the end of the timeline, because Tears of the Kingdom is the latest game in the timeline and Skyward Sword's the earliest.
Yeah.
And there's all this stuff happening in the sky. I would not be surprised there's several references to Skyward Sword in Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, I mean, there are in Breath of the Wild already. Like, you can find locations from Skyward Sword in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think just even as, like, just a completionist kind of lore story stuff, you kind of got to play Skyward Sword. And it's, I played it when it came out on Wii and really enjoyed it. And then when it came out on Switch without motion controls, I replayed it in full. And really enjoyed it again.
Did you ever get used to not having the motion controls, like using the stick for your sword?
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay, because that was very weird for me, because I do have the HD version. That's what I started on most recently. I think I got, again, like 4 or 5 hours deep. I could probably just pick that save file up, honestly, because I wasn't...
Yeah, no, it's, I'm surprised you were... It gave me no pause whatsoever. I was like, yeah, this is fine.
I don't know. I think it's just because I am so used to like traditional Zelda controls, of the face button being how you swing your sword. It would be like if, I don't know, and I know that they did change
but
that up.
It's designed around it. It's like super relevant that you can have so much specificity over the sword. Like, it's important, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, maybe that's it, but next on my list is Final Fantasy X-2. But Kyle, thank you so much for talking me into finally playing Majora's Mask and talking to me about my experience.
Yeah, hopefully it comes to Switch in a couple years, and then you can replay it, and then you can have the experience that I had, where I was like, oh man, this is so much better the second time.
Yeah, like, I would love to at some point. Yeah. As of now, the top 5 Zelda games of all time is a very tough list to crack into.
Yeah,
but Majora's Mask doesn't hit it for me. Like, it's probably like Breath of the Wild, Ocarina of Time, probably Link Between Worlds, Link to the Past, and
what's coming in 5?
Either Wind Waker, probably Wind Waker.
Yeah,
that's probably my top 5. I mean, just rattling it off the top of my head. Those bottom 3 are kind of reordered in some manner.
Well, it's clear that I like the dark ones. I like the Twilights and the Majoras, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I like Twilight Princess a lot as well. That's probably my next one on the list. Majora's is probably shortly thereafter, though, in terms of like my favorite Zelda games I've ever played. So
cool.
It's not like I'm like saying like, oh, I hated this game. It's just not like a top tier Zelda entry in my mind.
No, that makes sense. I mean, especially playing it when you played it, for sure. I mean, it's a 25-year-old game, right?
It's hard not to separate it from its era at this point.
Absolutely.
But Kyle, we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we've got Definitive Ranking and eShop Gem of the Week. We will be right back. We are back, and it is time for Definitive Ranking, a recurring segment where we take a Nintendo topic and give our personal top 5 lists. Since the bulk of today's show is all about Majora's Mask, Kyle, I want to get your top 5 time loop games. So start at 5, count it down to 1, give me a sentence or 2 about each.
Okay. Number 5, a recent one, Death Loop, which has loop in the title, is good. It's cool. We even talked about it a little bit in the previous section, where I feel like the big, you kind of don't even realize it until you're a good like 60 or 70% through the game, but like you're trying to have the perfect day. You're trying to get everything, you know, get everything on your to-do list done over the course of one day in Deathloop. And that involves like poking around and trying different things until you finally have a good path to get through it. And it's very rewarding to finally sort of execute on that path. Number four is Minute, which is spelled MINIT, which is a game. I'm trying to think of it. Like, is it hard to describe or is it easy to describe? Where like you're stuck in a loop that I think is literally 1 minute, if I remember correctly.
Yes, correct. But it's like Zelda style, right? Like old school top down Zelda.
Yeah. And then you just basically you have to make as much progress as you can in a minute, which sounds impossible. But the way the game works is like you unlock different shortcuts and speed and like you can go fast. It's funny. I don't remember the specifics of it, but I remember playing it and finishing it and really liking it and thinking it was charming. But it's also funny, too. It has a lot of good jokes in it. Number three, which I think might be higher on most people's lists when you talk about time loops, is Outer Wilds.
Outer Wilds. Yeah, I remember those games came out, I think, the same year.
Or I know. It's like
either 1 year and then the next year.
They're forever cursed to sort of be confused for one another. But Outer Wilds is the game where you're in a collapsing solar system and you're trying to figure out what's going on. You're not even really, I mean, I don't want to spoil anything. You're not really trying to stop it necessarily as much as you're just trying to figure out what is happening and why it's happening. And it's cool. You like travel to different planets and you find different things. And it, much like Majora's Mask, there's this like timer that's always counting down when the galaxy, solar system, or however you define it, is like blowing up, like no matter where you are, it's like this amazing spectacle that you sort of witness over and over. It's really cool. My number two is a game I adore, which is Returnal.
Yes,
I love Returnal. It's so good. It's funny because I'm not like usually a big roguelike, but Returnal just absolutely clicked with me. And the way it sort of uses the time loop narratively is just like fascinating and interesting, and it's so thoughtful, and like the metaphors you walk away from with that game is incredible. I highly recommend former intern and a YouTube extraordinaire now, Jacob Geller, put together a video essay on why Returnal is so special. And I recommend it to people to watch if they aren't like interested in playing Returnal, because it is a challenging game. If they don't want to go through that challenge, I recommend at least watching Jacob's video to get a good understanding of why the game is special and why it really uses the time loop idea in an interesting and fascinating way in the context of a video game. Just an amazing game. Just a fantastic game. Returnal.
Jacob Geller getting lots of love this episode, because you also brought up the Darkest Zelda video that he did. Both videos, very good. I really love Jacob's work. So
yeah,
well deserved getting two mentions on this episode.
I think we just have a lot of overlap in taste. So I tend to watch his videos and be like, I agree with you, Jacob. Good work. I wish I could make a video essays as good as this. And then my number one is kind of, you know, not surprising. It's Majora's Mask. That game is just so special to me. And, you know, all these, the other four games I mentioned, like use the time loop idea, but like something about the way Majora's Mask uses the time loop to really build a sense of character and place with all the people that exist in Clock Town and stuff like that. It's just really special. And I love Majora's Mask for that reason. It's so great. So that's my list.
You know what? We have four of the five same entries.
All right.
Which
all right.
I guess is unsurprising. I had a different game and then I remembered about Minute and I was like, oh wait, Minute's got to be on there. Yeah. Originally I had Lightning Returns Final Fantasy 13 just because I think I like it more than most people.
That's a time loop game? I didn't even know.
Oh, yeah. It's very much Majora's Mask-esque in its structure.
Okay.
Maybe I should check it out. Minus the moon crashing into Termina. But number five for me, Minute, for all the reasons you said. It's surprising that you can make as much progress as you can in that 1 minute time loop.
Yeah.
But I really enjoy that. This might surprise you, Kyle. Number four for me, Majora's Mask.
Yes and no. I mean, we just talked about it. It's like, you know, you came to it late. You don't have the nostalgia goggles I do. So I'm not super surprised. I'm glad it's on your list.
Yeah, I very much enjoyed it, as I said last segment. But there's some things that kind of held me back from making it so it was higher on this list. Number three, The Forgotten City. Did you play this?
I didn't. But like when I was looking over Time Loop games, that was one that I was like, one of those that I earmarked. I was like, oh, I need to play that one. I heard nothing but great things about it. But I didn't play it. I didn't do it.
So yeah, it originally started out as a Skyrim mod, and then it like they kept building and building and building on it, and they're like, oh, we should just make this its own standalone game. When you play it, it absolutely feels like you're playing like a Skyrim, like a game that's like very much inspired by like Skyrim and Fallout. Like the characters all kind of talk to you the way they do in those games. But like, you know, it's so puzzle heavy, and like you're basically like in modern day Italy, you're floating down a river and some guy saves you, and then he asks you to like, or some person, I forget if it's a man or a woman, but they ask you to go investigate this thing, and you fall down into this like ancient Roman Empire civilization, and everybody like going about their days as if like, you know, they're still in ancient Rome. And you have to figure out like the mysteries and everything behind it. And it goes places. That's all I will say. Like, you should go into this not knowing much more than what I've told you. But yeah, it goes some crazy places. And basically, like, the loop is that, like, if anybody breaks the law, everybody gets killed.
Right.
And like, so you just have to like navigate this stuff kind of avoiding breaking the law while also like defying rules, and like, and you know, if you break the law, you've got to like just kind of get out of Dodge and start over essentially. It's intense in those moments, and then the ending is just very, very fun to navigate. So that's why it reached there. It came out originally, the mod hit, let me look at this, the mod came out in 2015, but it came out as a standalone game in 2021. That's also when it came to Switch.
Right.
So, yeah, it's it is
on Switch.
Yeah, it came out a few. It might be a cloud version, but I don't think it is. I think it's actually a native version. But it came out on Switch, I think, like 3 months after the other versions of like PS5 or PS4, Xbox One and PC. But it is on Switch. Number two, Deathloop, for all the reasons you said. I really love the dynamic of Colt and Juliana. I think that's a really. The way they play off each other is great. The actors in both roles are great. And just getting those powers that, you know, some of them feel reminiscent of Arkane's previous work in Dishonored, but other ones just kind of like expand and like surpass what you could do in Dishonored, which is really cool because Dishonored was a great power fantasy. Deathloop, just the way you can customize your character's build by like stealing these other powers from characters, it's really, really satisfying. And then when you finally piece it all together, it feels great. And then number one for me, Returnal. One of my favorite games of that year. It boggles my mind that this is the company that basically all they had been known for to that point was like kind of like arcade style, like twin stick shooters. And like then they come out with this where it's like this full on like AAA action roguelike game. And again, roguelike, not my favorite genre either, but it's a very, very good game, very high quality. And it was like one of the first games on the PS5 that I was like, oh, this game rules. Like, this is amazing.
Yeah,
a true next gen experience is what it felt like. And it's finally on PC. If you don't have a PS5, but you have like a PC that can run it, it's on PC now. So
yeah, definitely play that game. It's so good.
It's a very, very good game. But yeah, I'm not surprised we had so much overlap because, you know, at least three of those five games on our list are like just essential games that, you know, regardless of your affinity for time loop games, you should play. I think Majora's Mask, Deathloop, and Returnal. But yeah, Forgotten City, very good. Minute, very good. And what was your other one?
Outer Wilds.
Outer Wilds, right? Yeah, that never clicked with me, honestly. Like, I tried to play it, but I just kind of fell off very quick. And but yeah, I know that that's a beyond beloved title, so check that out as well. And Kyle, that brings us to our final segment of the episode. It's the eShop Gem of the Week. Usually I have the guest bring their eShop Gem to the show, but this week I want to give a shout out to a game that I reviewed for us back in 2019. That is Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Lair. So Yooka-Laylee, the original Yooka-Laylee came out a few years prior to this. want to say like 2016, maybe 2017. I think 2016. And it was like, it's a bunch of former Rare developers, right? And they went out, founded Playtonic, which is their studio now. And they decided, hey, we're going to make a successor to Banjo-Kazooie. It's called Yooka-Laylee. It's the same type of concept. It's a lizard instead of a bear. And then he has a bat in his, like, kind of flies around with
like
him.
An animal, to be clear, not a baseball bat.
Yes, an animal, correct.
Right.
And instead of a bird, it's a flying bat. And so, like, it's kind of similar mechanics and very much a collectathon. That first one was, it was very much Banjo-Kazooie in 2016 or whatever, whenever it came out. I was less excited about that. The collectathon kind of rubbed me the wrong way in that one, and I think I gave it a relatively lower score. Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Lair came out in 2019, and that game was the Rare developers still, or the former Rare developers. This time they were like, hey, we're gonna make a modern Donkey Kong Country, because Retro Studios has been handed the keys to that kingdom for Nintendo. So these guys are like, hey, well, let's basically make the game that Donkey Kong Country would be if we kept making Donkey Kong Country games to this day. And it's a lot of fun. It's great. It's basically, the premise is you start off, and it's a 2D platformer, and you start off with, like, hey, there's this impossible lair that you have to navigate through, and they just throw you right into it. And it's very true to the name. Like, this level is next to impossible. It's incredibly difficult. And you're going to die your first time you play through it, inevitably, at some point. I think I made it to the second room. And I was pretty proud of that, because it gets intense.
Yeah.
And there's boss fights mixed in. And basically, you have to make it to the end without dying. And so you emerge from that. You're like, how am I ever going to get through this? And then basically what happens is it dumps you into like the hub world. And you go around and complete these just typical like Donkey Kong Country style levels. And each one you complete gives you a bee that will circle you when you go into the impossible lair. And each bee that you collect adds an extra hit point. So that makes it so that for every level you complete, you get an extra hit in the impossible lair. And that means that, if you think, all right, I have 10 extra hit points, I can go in and do it now. Or you can go all the way up to like however many levels there are. I think there's like something like 40 or 50, something like that. So like you can really like buff your character up, and then it's just a calculation of, all right, how much health do I realistically need to get through this thing? And you can go back and try it whenever. That really, no penalty aside from the time you spend, but like there's no checkpoints or anything. You just have to make it through it in one shot. So it's very difficult, but like it's so rewarding when like you get buffed up and you're able to enter this impossible lair with a little bit of confidence. So normally it's $30. This is why I'm bringing it up on this episode. It is currently on sale on Switch for $4.50, and that lasts through the end of February. So if you have been kind of holding this off, or even just yearning for the classic days of Donkey Kong Country, or just the fact that we haven't had a Donkey Kong Country game in over a decade, go check out Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Lair. I highly recommend it.
I mean, I need to get this, especially at that price, because I love Donkey Kong Country, and it's embarrassing that I haven't played this yet. I'm going to download it right now.
Yeah, and again, like, it's a bunch of the people that made Donkey Kong Country. So it's like, it's like people who know what they're doing. It's not just like a fan game where it's like, all right, this might be good, this might be bad. Yeah, very much recommend that game. And also, God, what's his name? Kevin Bayliss. He's the original artist of all those games. So he created the current version of Donkey Kong. He created Diddy Kong. He's on this team. And, he did a lot of the artwork for this as well. So it's very reminiscent of it. They also, I think Grant Kirkhope still does the soundtrack and everything. So they really brought back a lot of the people. I know David Wise was the one who did most of the Donkey Kong Country soundtrack. But I don't know if they got David Wise back. I think it's just Grant Kirkhope.
Okay. Well, I'm downloading it right now, literally.
Whoa.
I'm on my Switch.
That is it's instant gratification, they call it. Yeah. Sorry, I'm looking up. Oh, no, it is. David Wise did contribute to the soundtrack. I'm sorry, I was looking that up while I stalled.
Oh, that's even better. David Wise, I mean, not to like pit Kirkhope against Wise. They're both fantastic composers. But I definitely am in the Wise camp in terms of my fandom. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's funny because, Ben Hansen, when he was hosting the Game Informer show, he would always, whenever we would go to E3, he would always have these developers come in, and like he would get like an Airbnb, set it up for like the Game Informer show, and just host every single night. We would have like developers would just kind of come in, leave, talk about their game, kind of sit at a round table you would never expect. And I was leaving the show one, because we would start off with all Game Informer editors, and then we would leave, and then developers would kind of come in our place, and Ben would kind of just chat with them about their games and like what they thought about the show so far. And as I was leaving, I'd turn the corner and Grant Kirkhope's just there. And I'm like, what? This is the weirdest thing ever. But I guess Ben had booked him on the segment after mine. But I was like, this is like kind of surreal to just turn the corner and, oh yeah, there's the composer of so many games that I grew up playing. Almost as surreal as when I was at MAGFest. Oh God, was this 2011 maybe? And I just turned the corner and Nobuo Uematsu was just standing there. And I'm like, what?
That's funny.
So yeah, there are plenty of random encounters to be had at E3 or any industry event, such as the time I ran into Hideo Kojima in the men's room. But that's another story for another day. Kyle, thank you so much for joining me for this episode and chatting with me all about my first time playing through Majora's Mask. I feel like this was therapeutic in some ways.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to complain to you about anymore.
Probably Minish Cap now.
Yeah, Minish Cap is good. I'm like 3/4 of the way through it. I think I'm going to finish it again.
Wow, look at you.
I'm fancy.
Thank you so much to everyone for listening. Do me a favor, if you haven't already, throw All Things Nintendo a 5-star review and hit that subscribe button. You can also check us out on YouTube now, courtesy of Mr. Kyle Hilliard himself. And if you want to get any questions or comments in, you can get in touch with me at allthingsnintendo@gameinformer.com or hit me up on Instagram @BrianPShea. And as always, you can join the Game Informer community Discord, which is a perk for subscribing to our Twitch channel even just for 1 month. Kyle, where can people find you on the internet?
Twitter, mainly. But hey, Marcus and I are streaming Dino Crisis 2 on Twitch right now, every week. So,
you know, right now, as you're recording this episode.
Well, not right now. I mean, but like you just pitched, like, hey, follow us on Twitch and you can join the Discord. Or, you know, like, hey, Marcus and I are playing Dino Crisis. Isn't that fun? That's a reason to come over to Twitch.
That's a very fun game to stream, I would imagine.
This is my first time playing it.
Well,
it's been going well so far.
Well, Kyle, thank you again. That is our show for this week. Take care. We'll see you next time.